Good morning, and welcome to The Wilf Show. This is Tana Hartman for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And our guest this morning is Ed King. Ed King is a longtime activist, an historian by trade, and a member, or no, you're not a member of the NC Green Party, partly because the party
I'm a member of it. Which means that I'm active with it, but I'm not a registered Green.
And not a registered Green. Okay, let's explain the difference here. Why is that?
Well, in North Carolina, you can't register as a Green because Greens are unqualified as a party. In other words, if you haven't gotten the signatures in, you can't even say that you exist.
Okay.
And so therefore, you're not a legal option. Register for.
Well, and that's what we want to talk about this morning is ballot access. What does it mean? Under North Carolina law, a party, in order to achieve ballot access, has to have nearly 70,000 currently signatures, and that's because the law requires 2%, is that right, of the last gubernatorial election turnout, and so that number will fluctuate depending on turnout, but this time it's nearly 70,000.
And if you get on once, but you're lucky enough to get 70,000 without paying somebody to stay out in front of the post office a dollar a signature like the libertarians do in order to get on, which is what they've
done. A dollar a signature?
Yeah. And they spent $100,000 six times in the last 10 years to get on the ballot in North Carolina. They're the only third party that really has. Natural Law got on once, but so, in other words, and their money comes from outside the state, so they're independently wealthy, and Greens are not even willing to use, if we had the money, we would not be willing to do that.
It would sort of be compromising your principles.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
Okay. The other thing is that once you get on a party, you have to have 2% of the vote to stay on.
Without having to do this
all over again the next cycle.
Okay. Well, that's really challenging. Tell us a little bit about the history of ballot access.
Well, ballot access really started in 1888. Before 1888, you didn't have a printed ballot anywhere in the country. And so what you did is essentially do what you do in the eighth grade to vote for your president of the class, which is to take a piece of paper out, write a name on it, and turn it in. And that was ballot access back before 1888. Well, some politics started in 1888, if you remember. That was a real bombastic, corrupt period of American political history.
Gee, there was more than one.
Right. It's a very closely parallel period to the one we're in right now. Corporations are running things and a lot of corruption and monopolies and things like that. So anyway, after 1888, they decided to have ballot access in the states. And so they would require like 10,000 signatures in order to, if you were a new party wanting to get on the ballot. And there were a lot of third parties back in those days too, by the way. A lot more than there are now. Reasonably so. But you'd have to have 10,000 signatures. And today, about a half to two-thirds of all the states only require 10,000 signatures for a third party to get on the ballot. Whereas North Carolina's got 70,000, it's quite a bit of a difference. We're the third most restrictive ballot access state in the whole country, behind Oklahoma and West Virginia.
Really? And y'all have been waging a very long battle for this, to get on the ballot.
Let me say, to start off with, Green Party in North Carolina started with a bunch of people in Orange County, Dan Coleman being the leader, who felt they didn't even want to worry about electoral politics, and they didn't want to even run anybody on the state or on national level. We don't concentrate on the city council. So we got Joyce Brown elected as a town council person in Chapel Hill, and she got worse. She was the highest vote getter on the whole council before she had her four terms or whatever it was up. She was very popular. Dan was more of an intellectual who wrote books, and he wrote this book in 1994, which is, I think, one of the most is a classic in
Echo Politics, Building a Green Society, and that's right. by Dan Coleman, Rutgers University Press.
Right, and he's right. an alderman in Carborough now.
We know Dan, yeah.
So Dan's view essentially was, and all of us pretty much who were in the Orange County Greens, I felt he was right, is that we should spend all of our time really on local issues. And if someday down the future, the local politics things, was covered pretty well, then we might grow into a statewide or a nationwide
party. When was this?
Party. This was back in the 80s.
Okay.
Middle 80s. His book was published in 1994, that was about the crowning. That was about the end of his peak period of activism in the Greens. So basically, he warned us all, who were thinking about forming a statewide party. He says, you're going to waste all your time getting signatures and filling all the bureaucracy's requirements, and you're going to forget about the educational part.
Has that happened?
Well, to a degree, it has. In other words, if you aspire, if you have the ambition to run a candidate on a statewide ballot in North Carolina, you spend awful lot of time out on sidewalks getting people to sign signatures, going into boards of elections and making sure that all the signatures are verified voters, and doing all
leaping through the hoops.
Legal,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The legal loops. And so it does take a lot of your time away from the 10 key principles, 10 key values of the Greens, which is what most people are, why people are Greens.
Can you give us those principles, just a brief?
Basically, Greens, one of them, decentralization, feminism, nonviolence, local economy, emphasis on sustainability and the future. I'm coming up short, but anyway, That's a handful of them.
All right, those are pretty important too.
Mm-hmm.
So where does it stand right now? Okay.
Well, we've never been able to get on a ballot in North Carolina. We've never been able to have 70,000 valid signatures to get on a ballot. So therefore, we can't run candidates in any partisan election. We can run candidates in a nonpartisan local elections where you don't have to be a party member in order to run for office.
And how often does that happen?
Well, a lot of local elections are nonpartisan.
Have the Greens run in these local?
Oh, yeah. We've not. Yeah.
Aside from outside of this area.
Yeah, this area is the place where we've been most successful here in Orange County, Joyce Brown especially. We've got a water commissioner down in Mecklenburg County who's a Green. But there's not. Like the northeastern states and California and all the others where Greens are running city councils. We don't have that situation in North Carolina, obviously. Well, the biggest reason why in North Carolina is that the Democrats in North Carolina do not encourage they are big D Democrats before they're little D Democrats. They're not progressive, except for a handful. And therefore, they don't support other progressive parties like the Greens because they consider them competition in elections for state senator, state representative, or whatever. So the Democrats don't want the Greens to grow. The Republicans don't want the Libertarians to grow, another third party. So third parties are having a hard time getting the ballot access laws changed, so it's easier for third parties to get on the ballot.
Okay. From everything I've read, people seem to accept or that these ballot access laws are in fact ways to maintain a two-party system.
Absolutely.
and we're unusual in that. I lived for years in Germany, and I know just having two parties on a ballot is rather unusual.
Part of the reason why we have a two-party system in this country is because we have a winner-take-all type of election.
Okay.
Which makes it impossible really for third parties. If you had a proportional representation, then any party that feels a candidate could get some representation, and it would be much more democratic. And countries,
backward countries like Uruguay had done this since the beginning of the 20th century. We could go to the rest of the world and find all sorts of places where proportional representation has been the rule, and they're much more democratic than we are. Ours is we would call ours a duopoly, and since money is so important to get elected, I would call it a plutocracy instead of a democracy.
This also, there's been some argument that this violates the Helsinki Accords, which require, what is it, that people have access,
Copenhagen,
are able to, open elections and able to, I guess, run candidates and parties of their own choosing.
Yeah, that's the Copenhagen.
The Copenhagen, the Copenhagen Agreement of the Helsinki Accords.
Right.
And could you talk a little bit about that, about what?
Yeah, well, basically we've won, third parties have won some suits in North Carolina. The Socialist Workers Party got on the ballot back in 1980. Slipped up, and got where it was. I think at that time it was only 100,000. I've forgotten how many they had to get, but they got on the ballot, and as a result, the people were upset. The powers that be were, and the two major parties were so upset that the possibility of a Marxist party would, you know, might field a candidate would win an election.
Yeah.
That they changed the law and said, well, you only have to have 5,000 signatures in order to get on, but if you sign one of those petitions, you have to join the party.
Okay.
So it was really a witch hunt. They were trying to identify who the socialist workers people were by through the ballot access law. So, it's a witch hunt.
Within the past 2 or 3 years, there are three academics, and I want to say it's Indiana State University, that have done a study or begun a study, I think it's still ongoing, about ballot access. And they have looked at all the things like petitions, signatures, and the various impediments to ballot access. And their preliminary conclusions, and they talk about what have typically been what have been assumed to be the barriers, but they're saying that their data is actually showing that these may not be as important, that there may be a way basically around the petitions, for instance, if parties minor parties begin to concentrate more on fusion, which as I understand it, fusion is sort of like forming a coalition, I think is what you said. So,
well, we're a good example in the state of third parties that have tried to work together to get the ballot access laws changed in the legislature. Libertarians and Greens, who are probably on polar opposites in terms of ideology, in terms of principles of politics and so forth, have gotten together on what's called an open ballot coalition.
But are there no Democrats? I'm sorry for interrupting, but are there no Democrats who might be leaning?
Bless Ellie Kinnaird's heart, in Paul Lubke's heart, there are Democrats who are working hard to try to get the ballot access laws changed, but they are few and far between. And we usually can get these laws passed through the first committee in the House. Sometimes we get it passed in the on the floor of the House, and then it gets killed in the Senate, or somewhere at the end, after we've gotten a pretty good law through all the committees, somebody gets up in the last hour of the legislature before they're going home and guts it.
Oh,
Representative Philip Hare from the western part of North Carolina did that job on us and 2005, after we had a real good chance of changing the law to making it reasonable. The interesting thing about it is that there are a couple of states that only require 25 signatures on a petition to get a third party validated.
Why would they require any at all then? That's
a good point. I think in Florida, you only have to write a letter to the Secretary of State or something like that to say you want to be on a third party.
And how have third parties fared in those areas?
They certainly haven't dominated, their politics. It hasn't made them that more domineering.
No, but the Greens have become a presence in the United States.
They are in California, they are in Oregon, they are in Minnesota, Michigan, they are in some states of the Northeast, Massachusetts, New York. There's some been places where mayors and city councils have been dominated by green people, but it's not happening in North Carolina. It's not happening anywhere in the South.
Talk a little bit. Is there an appeal right now that's going on?
Yes.
About that case.
Okay, along with the libertarians, with the ACLU's help, brought a suit against the state for saying about access laws should be declared unconstitutional because they denied people the right to vote or to run. And Judge Hobgood over in the Wake County Superior Court decided that that was not valid. So he ruled against us, and so we're appealing it. But
I wonder
it's
what
costing
he based
us
that ruling on.
Good question. You know, I think most of the ACLU lawyers and the other lawyers that we had going said that he went against the facts, of the case, and basically it was a political decision.
Okay, and it just occurs to me. I just remember reading that. That he didn't write an opinion himself, that he just accepted basically the government's opinion on this, which had already been written.
He accepted the Democratic Party's opinion.
Oh, it was the Democratic Party. Okay.
In this state, the Democrats are more of an obstacle for the Greens to get on the ballot than the Republicans. Republicans all want the Green Party on because we would oppose competition to the Democrats, and of course the Democrats all want the Libertarians on because they pose competition to the Republicans.
Well, how has Joe Hackney responded to this?
Joe is still. Last time I talked to him was still in a kind of the mindset that Ralph Nader was responsible for George Bush being elected in 2000, so therefore...
I've heard a lot of people say that, but
he's not.
It seems nonsense.
It is nonsense. And Ralph Nader has given I don't know how many explanations of this, but I'm sure he's blue in the face trying to give explanations. But if you look at the Florida vote, for instance, you'll see that there were more Democrats that voted for Bush than there were voted for Nader. And you'll also see that Gore didn't win his own home state, and that Gore threw in the towel too early in Florida, and that's one of the reasons why the Supreme Court ended up with it instead of it being decided in Florida. And there were so many strategic mistakes made in that campaign in 2000 by the Democrats, none of which they want to own up to, and all of which they want to blame on the Green Party and Ralph Nader.
Yeah,
it's a scapegoat situation.
It is. It's really unfortunate. Nader, I have to say, I really admire his persistence, his diligence, and his intention, of trying to right these wrongs. And he has filed a civil liability suit. Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about that suit.
Okay.
But Nader is a lawyer, and he's had lots of experience in the courts, as you know, with his consumer activism. And so he feels confident, with that. I guess he gets lots of money somewhere to do that. Green Party doesn't have much money to be able to do anything with anything, so
yeah.
That's our basic problem. I think Ralph is kind of a model citizen. And I think that he has gotten a black eye from that 2000 experience, which is undeserved.
Oh, I think it's undeserved, too.
And I think he's going to go down in history, by historians who look at the whole record and so forth as one of the greatest Americans that lived in this
period of time. Yeah, as a great champion.
Great champion. Going against the odds for the little fella.
Well, I'm going to take just a minute, and we have an announcement. The media... if it is not already, should be your second priority, the second issue you care about, and that's if it's not the first. If no matter what it is you care about, if we don't have an independent media to which we have access, then the message isn't going to get out, and that is a serious problem in this country. Your issue won't get publicized, and with most of our airwaves dominated by commercial giants like AT&T and Verizon, supporting our local community media centers, at like local community radio stations like WCOM, become all the more important. WCOM is a wholly listener-supported community radio station. And we depend on you, our listeners, for support, for keeping us on the air. And we are your voice. You can come in here. If you have something to say that you believe needs to be heard by others, you can come here and have a voice, which you will not find at larger and certainly not at commercial stations. So please support. You can go to www.communityradio.coop and you can donate or you can volunteer and you can just learn more. But please do so. That's www.communityradio.coop and support WCOM, your local community, all volunteer supported radio station. Low power FM 103.5. And now we're back to with Ed King talking about ballot access in North Carolina. And it is not, it is something that is, well, a lot of us think it's seriously needed if we're going to make.
See, the real problem we've got in the country right now is that we're losing our democracy.
And some would say we've already lost it.
A very big thing that makes a country a democracy is multiple party system.
Yeah,
and we've always been a two-party system, pretty much dominant throughout the whole thing. But in the past, Democrats and Republicans have borrowed very liberally from third parties' platforms. As you recall, the New Deal was practically a rebirth of the Progressive Party, which was a rebirth of the Populist Party. And so it's and the Greenback Party and the Suffrage Party, all these the anti-slavery parties, all these third parties have the ones that have really given the meat to the major parties in terms of platform issues. And so what's happening now is that both Democrats and Republicans are idea bankrupt. They really, who for instance is giving really priority to global warming right now? We've got an issue that should be overriding in terms of our priority, but neither the Republican or Democratic Party have given it a priority. It's not high on their agenda. We're not getting anything done on it. Gore couldn't even do it as vice president of the Democratic Party. He had to wait till he got out of power before he started really getting somewhere with that issue. And so the Green Party is really, I think, the party of the future. It's not only the party of the future on global warming in this country, but it's also got momentum internationally. It's the only party that's international, which means that we, people in Germany, people in Colombia, Ingrid Betancourt, and all these people, who are Greens. They're running for Greens, and they know about Green values in other countries. Well, they don't. Green values aren't known in this country, and they need to be desperately because they contain the seeds of grassroots democracy, which is one of the 10 values that this country desperately needs. We need to get away from money, we need to get away from bosses, and we need to get away from two-party duopolies over the system, and the Green Party is a real opportunity. I think it's a wave of the future.
I actually hope you're right. I have a lot of respect for the Greens and what they have tried to do, what they've done in some other countries, and what they've tried to do here. What are the plans? What are you all doing now? I mean, where are your efforts focused?
Well, we got Cynthia McKinney. We got 500 signatures on which enables anybody who writes in her name on the ballot this fall to have it counted. In other words, you can't write in a candidate and have it counted unless you've got 500 signatures on file with the state board of elections, and that process has just been successfully completed by the Greens. So people who vote for Cynthia in the November election by write-in variety will have their vote counted. which is something we couldn't even do for Ralph Nader in the last election in 2004. He wasn't even a valid write-in candidate. So anybody who voted for him in 2004 in North Carolina didn't have their vote counted.
There was an article just Wednesday in the Herald Sun, mm-hmm. the Metro section, mm-hmm. About the Green Party campaign in Durham. It's not entirely accurate, it appears, but it does mention Cynthia McKinney.
She was here.
Yeah.
And how many people know that even know that she's here? Because there's a conspiracy in the media, you know, to keep it quiet and not to let people know that there is a third party candidate that's running and that she's here, and you can go out and see her, you know. And so if people that went to the No Bookstore, which is an institution in and of itself over out on Fayetteville Street in Durham, we really had a wonderful night talking with her.
She's a good speaker.
She's a wonderful speaker, very warm person, a very elegant person. You know, people only know her because the media has tried to slam her. Some of her actions that she had going through security in Washington that they called attention to, which make her seem to be kind of a zany, violent type person or something of this order. They've done a number on her character assassination.
I noticed one of the things I noticed in this article, and you actually had pointed it out, was that they call. They're talking about the Workers' World Party is what they're talking here, not the Green Party. Okay, my mistake. Calling it a Marxist group, but it's not. But they are clearly trying to draw that connection in readers' minds.
Because Dante, who's a member of the Workers' Party, was one of the speakers at the rally, then you're guilty by association. You see, since the Workers' Party is a Marxist party, then the Green Party must be also. You know, that's that kind of thinking, and unless you've got a real sharp critical mind, you can't separate that kind of thought. You just lump them all together and say, "Oh well, I don't have anything to do with them." You know,
I guess it's right now. It's not looking very good for.
Well, it depends on whether you're looking about the short term or the long term. Well,
okay.
Our situation in North Carolina is that we're looking to be here for the long haul. And we're not going to grow until we get somebody on the ballot, a Green Party identified as a Green, that you can actually have a choice of voting for. We are working, therefore, to try to change the ballot access law so we can that'll happen in North Carolina. And we've got some chance, if we can get some help from some judges, you know, in the courts, too, then that we might be able to change that. L.A. Kinnaird and Paul Lupke have certainly been champions of it.
Yeah.
So, I think that in the short term, no, we're not going to have any. We're not going to win the election this fall. Cynthia's goal is to win 5% popular vote so that the Green Party can get federal financing, campaign financing. And so that's what our goal is in the short term. Nationally, but our real goal in North Carolina is to run Green candidates in nonpartisan elections locally, and to get the IRV.
Instant runoff. Now that may help you. That's one of the things, as I recall, these two, three people who are studying ballot access. They say instant runoff. You focus on that. That will help your cause.
Right. But some of the most progressive Democrats that we've got are opposed to IRV, and we did get it passed, and the governor signed it, so we're going to have a pilot for 3 more years.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad. Well, Ed, thank you very much. Is there a website people can go to learn more about the Green Party?
Green Party, www.gp.org is the national website, and www.ncgreens.org. I think it's .org.
NCGreen.org.
Is the North Carolina Green Party.
But you can also just Google Green Party.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about ballot access, you can Google ballot access.
Ballot access, too, and you can get a lot of resources.
There's a lot of experience in other states on ballot access that we haven't had a chance to really go through, but there's only been 4 instances where 70,000 signatures have been accomplished by a previously unqualified party in the country's recent history.
Well, good luck. I support what y'all are trying to do. And thank you, Ed. And I hope you'll come back again soon. I hope we'll have something to talk about that's positive, more positive soon. But everyone, just want to tell you, you're listening to The Wilf Show, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Where there's a Wilf, there's a way. WCOMLP 103.5 FM, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And stay tuned for Democracy Now!